Right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode, I think we're at 119 of Just Press Start here at Just
120.
Press
Start. 120, Jeff. 120.
Or it could be 120. Thank you, Ian.
No problem.
Of Just Press Start here at JustPressStart.net. Or maybe we're doing 119 over. Maybe that's it. So anyway, that voice you hear there is Ian Finley. Ian, welcome. Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everyone.
It is just the two of us this evening.
It's quite intimate, really.
I'm going to lower the lights a little bit.
All right.
Maybe get some candles. This is heading nowhere good. So, so how are you, sir?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad.
Not too bad. So, a fairly interesting week so far in gaming, even though a couple major releases, but it's more what's going on almost behind the scenes that's kind of making headlines, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, as usual, it seems to be that the journalism itself, inverted commas around journalism, obviously, is what seems to be the talking point, as opposed to, you know, the games on their own merit. So, same old, really, but quite an interesting week.
Well, let's go into some of the details here. So, the big one that's actually happening before our eyes is, I guess you'll have to give a little bit more detail, but it looks here as if something is going on where a review score was just changed, but it wasn't based on really any definable quantity. It's why don't you go into a little bit of detail about that?
Yeah, well, in the run-up to SimCity, which released today, I believe, or whenever you're listening to it, it released on the day we recorded. In the run-up to it, you had some outlets saying that they didn't feel they could review the game for release due to the fact they didn't feel that the conditions would be akin to what the user base will experience, basically because even the single player component is online all the time and the Origin servers weren't available to the were available to the reviewers before the game released, and they set up temporary servers just specially for them. But some reviewers said, we're not happy, you know, we need it to be an authentic experience that our readers will have, so we'll review it after it comes out. Others decided that was fine, you know, that works. So Polygon, which, I mean, we've mentioned a few times, the various good articles come out of Polygon, various questionable, somewhat self-aggrandizing videos, wrote the review based on this server, and gave it a 9.5. And it reads like a 9.5, you know, it's a very well-written review, etc., etc. They've then, in wake of the release and people being unable to get onto the game because the servers are simply overloaded, we've got people being told to wait 30 minutes to get onto a server. We've got people then coming back 30 minutes later and being told to wait 30 minutes to get onto a server. We've got people losing progress, having corrupted, like, they've, you know, designed a little town or an avenue or something, and it's been corrupted and it's completely messed up. And so there's been a lot of issues with SimCity upon release, which anyone who knows anything about online always games knew would happen.
Well, of course, yeah.
Release day, always online game, it's going to have
There seemed to be a fairly major release sometime early last year that ran into that people then called the worst game ever for about like a day, and then sold 6 million.
I think you're a time traveler. You've gone back in time from when Diablo 3 is released on the PlayStation 4.
Oh! Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Man. I think you're thinking of Diablo 3, which is, of course, an exciting new prospect coming to the PlayStation 4.
And the PlayStation 3 as well.
And right.
And Blizzard is going to have a booth at PAX, I understand. I don't know how popular it will be, but anyway, go on. Sorry.
Well, that's the background, basically. They wrote the review, blah, 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 and then in wake of the people saying, look, there's a lot of trouble with it, and some of their own experiences since the review's been written, they got together and decided they'd lower the score. Originally got a 9.5, it now sits at an 8, with the promise of it'll be readdressed once these issues are sorted. So this changing of a review score, even though it is per the reviews policy, they laid it out at the very beginning of Polygon actually being Polygon, as opposed to Verge/. They said, it is up to our discretion to change review scores if we see it fit. But okay. It's led some to question that decision. Basically, that's the issue. Should a review score be changed in light of something like this?
Well, I'm looking at the Twitter wars that happened about 2 hours ago on this, and Ian Bogost, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He is a game designer for Persuasive Games and a professor at Georgia Tech, who called P. Kolar, the writer, media addict, and deputy reviews area editor for Polygon. This is his quote. "You're a heavily funded purported, quote, news site. I expect you to do better. This is Clown Town Amateur Hour. Rather than research this matter to see if it had merit, we decided to make up this nonsense." And it just goes on and on and on. He just obliterates Polygon for this. He then says games journalists perhaps don't have a background in real journalism, so therefore they don't have a way to know that what they're doing is wrong, kind of. So people are really, 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 well, this guy at least, is very, very angry about this. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems kind of odd to barely tick off a few tenths of a point. Because, oh, by the way, it might be completely unplayable. But, I mean, I guess that's the whole thing. Is the underlying idea of rewriting the review based on other people's experiences? I mean, that I have a bit of a problem with, I guess. I don't know. It's confusing. What do you think?
Well, I think that's one of the issues I have with it, certainly, is the... And it's one of the issues he first raised. Actually, the guy you're talking about, Ian Bogost, who is at IBOGOST, at Ibogost, who's actually got a follow from me for his work tonight.
Yeah.
I thought, definitely, because a lot of what he said I actually quite liked.
Right.
But one of his main complaints was that they cite anecdotal evidence as a reason for changing the score. The fact people have complained about getting into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a concern of mine. You know, a review should be a reviewer's experience of the game. Be it completely biased, be it whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. It's your view of the game.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be altered by any outside influence to the best of your capabilities. Obviously, your own preferences and your own expectations are going to be reflected in the piece. But someone shouldn't be able to say to you, "Oh, well, I don't like the game." And then you go, "Actually,
you know what?
Yeah, I'm going to knock it down a couple." That's not quite what Polygon have done.
No.
But as a concept, it's fairly atrocious. And yeah, it's been knocked down by, if I can't access a game for 30 minutes, that game doesn't get an 8. I mean, we don't do scores and we've been into that, but how knocking it down by however much, what is it, 1.5 or something? Yeah,
right.
Knocked down by 1.5. If not being able to access a game for a large portion of time gets you knocked off 1.5, then I don't know what the scale's based on. I don't know what the lowest could possibly be.
Right. Well, again, though, 30 minutes on the day something is released that something's got server errors, you know, is that a significant issue? I mean, that seems like it's kind of tough to... You know, again, we'll bring up Diablo 3 again. Yeah, 6 million people bought it and downloaded it the first day. Yeah, the servers should have been prepared for it, but... You're going to run into that whenever an enormous number of people are downloading a lot of data and all trying to access a finite number of servers. So, I mean, what is a significant amount of time, I guess, too?
Well, this is part of the reason I think the original review should just be preserved.
Yeah.
Because you can't take in, like you say, is it a massive issue if you can't play it for a day? No. And that's probably reflected in the score only going down by a little bit, because of thinking,
right.
Well, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But one of the sort of validations of this approach has been, we're a digital medium, so we might as well take advantage of the fact that we can have almost real-time scores. As the game develops and progresses, we can alter.
Right.
Which, yeah, I don't mind as a grand concept, it's a nice idea and a nice way to differentiate between digital and print. But just where do you draw the line? It doesn't ever stop.
Right, like, exactly.
They fix it tomorrow, they patch it tomorrow, so you put the score back.
So it's back to 9.5,
something else happens. Yeah, something else happens. There's a blip in the server, and you...
Right.
it's nice to have the idea that a reader could go on and find up-to-date information about what score the game has. But it doesn't work. You need a review to just... They shouldn't have changed the score.
To just be,
Yeah, if they would have had a little paragraph at the top, this is how I would have approached it. Little paragraph at the top saying, this review may not be reflective of some people's issues that they're having on launch day. We will get, you know, explain the situation and warn people, if you buy it now, there is a problem with the servers, so
right.
You may struggle with that. But that's it, there's no need, the score, I don't like scores as it stands anyway, but changing it, just fluctuating the score back and forth, depending on, just almost whim. It's almost pure whim and fancy. Mm-hmm. Just, oh, we'll put it down a bit, we'll put it up. I don't think works, and I don't think it works as Polygon intended.
No, and again, that's also kind of the point of Metacritic, because if something is ridiculously high and people have those issues, well, the first thing people always say, oh, it must be a paid review. But, or if somebody gives too low, what they feel is too low a score to a game they liked, then, oh, obviously they have a bias. But let's give an example from last year when Skullgirls came out. I was one of the only people I remember when I first read reviews that said the inputs for the Xbox controller were not working and I used several controllers. And that made me nervous. I mean, I will admit, as I was finishing up my review, I went and read other sites to see, man, is anybody else having this problem or is it just me? Because if it is just a problem with my particular hardware, you know, I don't want to hold that against a game either. But since I tried two controllers and no one else said it, I didn't change what I was going to write. I just said, okay, maybe other people aren't having that. And I don't think I even said that in the review. I just said, this is what I am encountering. And that's how I've always done my reviews. There was one, there was a game a couple years ago that I reviewed, and everybody and their brother was having issues getting into it. I didn't have a single crash or glitch, but I did mention, hey, there are many reports that there are glitches and crashes, so keep that in mind, try out a demo.
Yeah, that's how I think it should have been approached.
Yeah, and I think that's really the only way you can do it. Same thing with Aliens Colonial Marines. You know, I didn't think it was the worst game ever, but it was funny because I was reading it saying, I kind of dig it, and then I started reading all the negativity, and I was that time it made me at least go back and re-examine it a little bit to see, well, geez, am I missing something? But I didn't just say, well, now I'm going to bash it because everyone else is, but I did say, let me go reevaluate, let me look at some things, and maybe I should take – you know, a little bit more critical look at it than I seem to have been otherwise. But I certainly didn't go, well, everyone else hates it, so now it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar to you, but perhaps slightly more arrogant in that I refuse to read any other review of a game.
I try not to.
Right. Yeah, I just, even if I've finished the review and I'm like, oh, I really hope, you know, or just wonder, like, is that just me who's interpreted that way? Or I'm just like, nope, I'm just writing what I experienced. I'll put it out there, and then if I want to, I can read reviews and be like, whoa, I was not, you know, with the majority on that one. But yeah, you can't change the review. I think you either don't review it if you don't think it's a fair system, if you suspect. They did mention a lot of outlets, and Polygon included, did mention in the reviews that they were playing on a server that is not the servers people will have to experience, slash there wasn't, you know, however many people trying to get on the server, so they didn't experience any problems, but they could foresee problems. It's the changing of the score. I think it's superfluous. I think put a paragraph there saying, our fears about the potential for the servers to overload have clearly been realized on release day. They're working on a patch, and as demand goes down, it should hopefully somewhat resolve itself. Blah, blah, blah. Be warned. Read the rest of the review. That's all it had to be. But as it is, changing a score, and it's gone mental.
Well, that's just it. I mean, part of me says it's a little bit entitled gamer again, which I don't want to get into the whole thing again. The same thing with Diablo. Well, it didn't work for 30 minutes. It's crap. Well, hold on. You know, and I think it's the same thing. You know, when you write a review, you have, you know, again, everyone's hardware is different, especially if you're reviewing a PC game. Just because it's not working for you doesn't mean everyone else is having that, but you still have to write that review. If you tried the game and 12 times it doesn't work, you need to say, look, I've had 12 crashes in a row. You know, it's kind of difficult.
It's tough. I appreciate what they're trying to do with the score. It's a nice acknowledgement of the problem. I just think it's short-sighted.
Yeah, there are so many better ways to have handled it. So it makes me – I really don't know any too much about Polygon. I really don't. Maybe I should. But does this smack of say what you want about us as long as you spell the name right? Does it seem like that this is a publicity grab, or does this seem like they just really tried something and it didn't work out the way they hoped?
I really don't know. I'm conflicted between my sort of innate feeling that there's nothing like that going on. It isn't that. But then some of the responses on Twitter, some of the sort of the way, obviously the people working at Polygon are passionate about Polygon.
Oh, of course.
It's obvious. So they're going to leap to its defense to some degree. But that whole thing. Hello.
We have Jason joining us now. Sorry about that. That's a little bit unorthodox for us. Jason, good evening. How are you?
Not bad.
Excellent. It's just you, me, and Ian tonight, Jason. And we were just talking, as you mentioned on Steam, because we were chatting offline there, about the Polygon incident today. So Ian and I were saying that there were probably many different ways it could have been handled, but maybe changing a review score might not have been the best idea.
Well, I mean, they got the real-world experience of it now, and I kind of see their point, but I don't know. It's, as you said, it seemed kind of odd that they changed their score.
Yeah, we were discussing that, you know, the idea that, you know, you could say, look, we're not having this problem, but, you know, people are reporting it or so on, you know, but our score stands because if the game, when the game does work, it's this. And again, how much time is a significant amount of time? There are so many issues. So the question I just asked Ian, again, because I don't know Polygon that well, does it seem to you, I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with them, does it seem like it's something that was just a publicity grab because it's getting their name out there as a review site? You know, good, bad, or indifferent, trolls are gonna hit the site tonight.
No, I follow the work of Arthur Geese when he was at IGN and at Team Xbox. This is something that he would do, just to get the right review out there.
Okay. So, based on this, and Ian, do you think we've kind of not beaten this into the ground, but do you think we should move on a little bit from this one into the next question about reviews?
I think the whole issue's probably had far more coverage than it deserves. So
probably. So, what I found interesting, Jen and I actually had a civilized, you know, whenever someone says argument, it always makes it sound like we were yelling and screaming. But we had a civilized debate about reviews, not based on this either. So Giant Bomb today reviewed Tomb Raider, which it was Brad Schumacher did the review, and he gave it 4 out of 5 stars. And what seemed to be his most significant complaint, he said he didn't like the way the story progressed in that it seems too convenient in the way Lara Croft goes from completely naive scientist-y girl with no life experience to stone-cold killer who's jumping from radio towers wearing only a tank top in a mountain snowstorm. So that's a legitimate complaint about the game, but what I'm wondering is, and this is where the argument started, I said, how, if you have a problem with it in one game, should you not have a problem in another game that handles things basically the same way? So I brought up Far Cry 3. So, Ian, you have not played it, have you?
I haven't played Tomb Raider, no. I've played Far Cry 3.
Oh, you have played Far Cry 3. Okay, Jason, you've played
Far Cry 3. I have not played Far Cry 3.
All right, so Ian, just see if you agree with my synopsis of the very beginning of Far Cry 3.
Go on.
Idiot dude bro in trouble with his idiot friends. They're drinking, partying. They get in trouble. And within 24 hours of horrible things happening to him, he is able to operate heavy weapons with expert skill and stab pirates in the throat while being completely undetectable.
So you're telling me that that's not real? Like, if that had happened to me, I wouldn't be able to fulfill my massacre in you know, thousands of tribal people for a seemingly pointless cause. You're saying that wouldn't happen?
Your mileage may vary.
Fair enough. I think it's a similar concept. I do.
It's a similar concept, but okay, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say there was the whole Far Cry 3 story. I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers or anything, but there is an element of he may not be this super incredible savior of the island that you perceive him to be. That's as vague as... I know it's vague, and
right.
I can't really say much more without ruining one possible interpretation of the game. So I think it's comparable, but a lot of it has to do with tone. And obviously, I haven't played Tomb Raider yet. I know someone who has slash is playing Tomb Raider at the moment. But I haven't played it, so I don't know what the tone's like. But if he felt while playing it that ruined his experience, whereas in Far Cry he didn't, then that's completely valid as a criticism.
Okay. See, I still kind of disagree with that, just because I think if games are similar enough in tone and you don't have a problem with a mechanic going a certain way in one, but you have a problem in the other, I don't know. I think you've got to strive for some sort of consistency, even if the story does diverge and the tone might be a little different. If the mechanic is a problem or the jump in ability is a problem, then...
I think this Tomb Raider was actually billed as the beginning. So, I mean, it was trying to humanize the character. And from what I read on the review, it does for the first hour.
Right.
It humanizes it. I mean, I don't know anything about the Far Cry part, but was it trying to make him like a realistic human being at the beginning of it?
No.
No, probably not.
No. But it was trying to do it in this one.
Okay.
And I haven't, without having played it yet, I mean, from all the reviews I've read about it, she becomes this killing machine after that initial hour or so. I mean, right. I think that's where his problem lies.
I mean, and again, to me, anybody's review of anything is their opinion, so everything is fair. I was just kind of curious about it. My other question, though, going back to this same thing, is, all right, if you want Lara to be a vulnerable sort of damsel in distress at first who become, you know, obviously through the strength of her experiences becomes what we now know her to be later on. How long do you keep the power creep, power seep? How long do you keep her powers from her and the game is still fun? I mean, obviously Tomb Raider is not a 70-hour RPG, so you can't keep her for the first third of an 8-10-hour game tripping over every branch and constantly getting hurt and bouncing off of things before people go, oh, come on. So I still haven't played it yet, but I just wonder, there's got to be a balancing act there too about making it accessible and making it fun, because at the end of the day, it's a game, and giving you a little bit more of a realistic character arc.
But is fun equal killing?
Shut up.
I know. I'm just saying. I mean, most of the fun that I had in Tomb Raider and in, let's say, Uncharted was the non-combat part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it was more puzzle-based with some combat sprinkled in, I think it probably would have been more acceptable anyway, mm-hmm. instead of Lara Croft killing machine once again.
So, I mean, that's what they're saying, that it's not like the first Tomb Raider where it was more exploration with, oh, yeah, occasional gunplay. This is like a slaughter fest. Is that what the...
I think it eventually devolves into one.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That it starts off a lot of character development, a lot of good stuff, and then it becomes somewhat like a cover-based shooter.
Oh, okay.
Which, for a Tomb Raider game, is... I mean, it is somewhat worrying. But, like, I haven't played it, so this is all just second-hand information, but... Yeah, it's an interesting point you raise, but it's so tough. If I'd have played Tomb Raider, I could have had a much better opinion on this.
Obviously, but unfortunately, since it just came out today, none of us have had, you and I have not had the opportunity yet.
Yeah, I haven't.
So it's something I still have on my radar for some point in the future. So, Other gaming news this week. Did we see the news today that it looks like, the rumor is anyway, that future Dead Space, the future of Dead Space is now in question?
Sales have been off?
Well, that's the rumor that EA said, well, since it didn't sell 5 million copies or whatever number they established as a baseline for, you know, moderate to major success, that they're done. So everyone on N4G that I saw was, take that, microtransactions. So what do we think?
I think blaming microtransactions is satisfying if somewhat short-sighted.
Yeah.
The real issue for me, anyway, I love the first Dead Space. I played it, I don't even know how many times I played it through. In fact, it mirrors my Mass Effect experience. Played and loved the first one, dropped out midway through the second one.
Okay.
And for me, it is, everyone feared this in the run-up to Dead Space 3, and its release has largely confirmed it. It's not a horror game anymore. It's like a schlocky horror film where something jumps out at you, and you jump, but you're not scared. It's,
right.
You know, it's reactive, but it doesn't affect you in any way. Which the first one was to some degree, but there was an unsettling undercurrent, and there was an element, it was paced very well, and there was tension that built, but as it's got more action orientated, in order to fulfill a demand that's apparently out there, but has fallen short, it has fallen short itself. So, I won't be sad to see the series go, to be honest. I'll be happy that it's gone before it's done any irreparable damage to the game that I loved.
So, as a fan of the series, then, this is my theory on, again, I think going after the microtransactions, again, giant bomb, again, Alex Navarro wrote a brilliant piece about microtransactions that, hey, folks, have you ever bought Rock Band? Have you ever bought songs for Rock Band? Those are microtransactions. So, you know, hating microtransactions is not the problem. But my question about any type of, especially the horror genre, and Ian, since you're a big fan of Dead Space, you can really answer this as well. Don't sequels to scary things become progressively less scary and progressively more action-oriented anyway? I mean, that's certainly the Aliens, the direction of the Aliens movies went. Because, again, what makes the first installment of any type of horror thing scary is the fear of the unknown. You don't know what the antagonist is capable of, what his or her powers are, where he or she may appear, motivations. You learn all of that, and it's the overall atmosphere that makes it horrifying, on top of, oh my God, that's a scary monster. But then when you go beyond that, you now know, based on that first film, first book, first whatever, what they're capable of. It's why the original Dracula, to people who first read the books back in the day, that was scary, but, you know, Twilight isn't.
Yeah, no, I see your point. And like you say, it's the same in other mediums, like
films.
I mean, the first time I watched Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Freddy Krueger, I was inappropriately young, but that's another story. But I remember it being, like, it's now devolved into very sort of action-y, comic-y, because the suspense isn't there anymore. Like you say, you get the thing of, oh, if they fall asleep, you can murder them in the dreams and they'll die in real life. That's pretty cool and shocking and scary. But then,
yeah, so the way they go on is...
Yeah, four films later, that's no longer. You know, you're just hoping people fall asleep just so you can join them.
And it becomes fear of scale. So again,
yeah,
that's why the second Aliens movie was terrifying in its own way, because while it was more of an action movie than a horror film, it was the scale of, oh my God, there are so many of them, and they move so fast, and they do this, and they do that, and oh my God, there's a queen. So it became, like they said, fear of the known, but you still have to keep ramping it up. So by the third movie, it just got ridiculous, and now there are 72 movies and a really crummy game in. So, again, so sequelization is a problem, but isn't it kind of always going to go away from something more atmospheric and go more action, just because you can't keep establishing an atmosphere? You've already established it. You'd have to do a new IP.
Well, what's... go on.
No, but to go back to the point of, I guess, degrading or returns that are bad, it just seems like, okay, So Dead Space started out as a survival horror game and eventually became this dude bro action game. Mass Effect was this hardcore RPG that EA got and eventually turned it into a shooter with RPG elements. So they seem to be having a history of changing up what the initial game was.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
The conceit, yeah.
Okay, I mean, I can see Mass Effect, I don't know. The difference between Mass Effect 1 and 2 was somewhat staggering. I mean, so I think they, mainly to me, they streamlined it rather than really killed the RPG elements. Because some of the things, I mean, obviously there were a lot of choices you could make in gearing and so on and so forth.
But they also made the world smaller, though.
That's true. That is true.
And they changed. For me, one of the first things that struck me that I thought this doesn't feel right anymore is the weapons. I thought having infinite ammo but with cooldowns added so much to the first Mass Effect game in terms of weapons. Like the sniper rifle was massively powerful, but one shot and you could not shoot it for a bit, so you'd have to switch. But now, similar to Dead Space, all of a sudden I'm picking up tons of ammo. I'm having ammo thrown at me
from right.
every direction, and it's universal ammo. So if I want to have a preference for a certain gun, I'm allowed to indulge in that, which is nice as a concept. I've said concept an awful lot tonight, but it's nice conceptually as a player to be catered to.
Right.
But it ends up weakening the game itself. I'd rather struggle. I'd be like, oh, the gun I've been relying on for the last 2 hours, I have no ammo for it, which is what Dead Space, the first one, did brilliantly. You mm-hmm. found a gun, you know, you start off with a plasma cutter, you get to grips with that, then you find guns are better, potentially, but not really, just in different situations. But because the ammo wasn't universal, you would have to use whatever you could find. And that is a large part of horror, that whole improvisation and feeling underprepared for the threat. It doesn't matter how big the threat is, instead of increasing the threat, you shouldn't really have to. You should be able to maintain the same stakes by having yourself somewhat weaker. Just don't provide the ammo. That's an issue. That's the thing that stuck with me with Mass Effect 2. The change to the guns was a massive hurdle for me to get over, and I found a lot of other changes didn't compensate.
Okay, now that's certainly a legitimate point, but if you had played Mass Effect 2 and it played exactly the same as Mass Effect 1, would you have felt that somehow cheapened it because I've already played this? I mean, I don't know. That's purely a hypothetical. I just wonder. I mean, people always say, oh, I want the same, you know, I want the same experience. But if you keep giving them the same experience, people start complaining about the sameness of the experience too. So I don't know the right answer. Dude broing everything certainly isn't it.
No, well, this is what, you know, what you just mentioned about Dead Space 3 hasn't made the money they expected shows that catering to this apparent demand of, oh, people want it more actually, they want co-op.
Right.
It hasn't worked out. Like, it's made some money, not enough. I haven't actually seen anything on this, but according to you and whatever news article you read, you know, that may be the series killed off. It's a thing we do. It happens in everything. Every single media. We get too much of something. People like something, so they carry on. They just carry on making it until everyone hates it and resents it. And it's wrong. You should do Fawlty Towers. Fawlty Towers, British sitcom, about 12 episodes. Regarded as one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. 12
and then
episodes,
move on.
That's your lot.
Yep.
The British version of The Office. Two seasons, Christmas special. That's it. Done. You're not getting any more. That's it.
Right.
Whereas, I mean, I don't want to bring America and British TV differences into it, but the American version of The Office is still going somehow.
Yeah.
And the main guy ain't even there for like three seasons or whatever. It's mental. People just need to know if your demographic analysis comes back and says this game will not make its money unless we change it fundamentally, don't make that game. Make a different game. Don't tarnish the IP. Because then, if tastes change, then you can come back to the IP and go, oh, now it's suitable, and now we can fulfill this IP's potential, as opposed to slashing it and ruining it and then tainting it forever.
I think where people make the biggest mistake, though, is because every time we get to a point like this, what we've always seen in other business models is a complete collapse. So, for example, the reason I think of it is just because what a stellar collapse it was. I don't know if they had them in England, Ian, but Jason, do you remember places called the San Francisco Music Box Company?
I honestly do not.
For a while, almost every mall had one of these. I just know because, you know, it was tchotchkes and music boxes, and it was the kind of place that my mom frequents. So they had them everywhere, and because they were popular, they opened more and more and more of them to a point where they just completely overexpanded. You know, again, every mall had one, sometimes two of this freaking store, and... You know, when everybody realized, hey, I really don't need any more music boxes, the whole thing collapsed under its own weight and disappeared. See also Electronics Boutique. Because, you know, there were malls that had two or three of those in a mall. I'm sure you remember that.
I do remember that.
Yeah. And it's just ridiculous. Well, if one's popular, five will be awesome. So it just overexpands and overexpands and then completely gets obliterated. So people, I think, see that in games, especially right now. Oh, if they keep doing this, more and more sequels, they're going to completely kill the industry. It's like, I don't see it as that. What you're going to see is critical failures like this that are going to make the companies go back and say, well, I guess maybe we do need to innovate more, rather than just say, well, there's just no money. You know, EA is not going to shut down tomorrow and say, well, there's just no money in this. They're going to take a step back and say, what are we doing wrong? They're not certainly not out to lose money.
Are they, though? Because this is the problem. It happens so frequently with the same, you know, like EA have done it before, you know, a lot of developers and big, what's it called? What are EA?
Well, Activision seems to be...
Yeah.
Well, it's things like they do it again and again. They take a promising IP, apply their own flavor to it, which everyone rejects, and then move on to something else.
But
so
that's
if they'd
so
learned
Guitar
a lesson,
Hero.
I'd be happy.
Yeah, Guitar Hero, exactly. Rock Band. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like the lesson's being learned, not yet, because even though they're saying it's been a bit of a failure, it's still made some money, I reckon.
But Jason made a good point there with Rock Band and Guitar Hero. They made like 73 copies of that game. And was it Rock Band or whichever one was pumping out DLC for every week for five straight years to the point where everybody got sick of it, but it's not killing Activision as a whole. Unfortunately, it does wipe out that developer for right now, but as you said, they'll move on to another genre, just like movies. You know, they'll go back, eventually they'll all go back to Westerns and everybody will... There'll be some innovation, and then everybody will run to that, but there's always going to be that next step of innovation because there's just too much money to be made for the entire industry to just collapse on itself.
Oh, yeah, it's not going to collapse, and it's not necessarily the industry that I'm worried about. It's more the individual IPs.
The individual IPs, certainly, but again, I think they all have a natural life anyway. But, you know, people say, oh, the video game collapse of 83. Well, it collapsed kind of, but it wasn't like they disappeared completely. You know, I still went to arcades after 1983. I still had my Atari. We played Nintendo. It took a couple of years, but you know, there were PC games. It didn't go away. It just shrunk to a manageable level until the innovation started again. It's not like video games did not exist and people were like, "What are these electronic dalliances of which people were speaking?" You know, so tell us of these video games. You know, it's not like, you know, I don't know. It just seems odd that people do predict doom and gloom in the end of all there is because of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, people are far too quick to... And even if something does die out, like, you know, let's say Dead Space 3, it's gone now, and other games like it die out because there's no demand or whatever. Like you say, it is just the way it works. It's, you know, that it'll fluctuate, it'll come back round, it'll start doing westerns, it'll... Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to say. So, yeah, I'm not one of those sort of harbingers of doom who think every slight decline is a massive like error in the industry and it's going to spell death of it or anything like that.
What does really seem funny, though, is the way that fans do react to the death of their beloved IP. I won't mention any names, but there's someone on this podcast who is a very big fan of a particular genre, and the fact that others do not share in that joy kind of baffles him. And, you know, I'm not really making fun of him, because we all have that IP that we all love. You know, I used to scream at everybody who would listen, why in the hell aren't you playing Psychonauts? Sure. But I guess, you know, my point is, game companies go out of business every day thinking that they've got the next big thing, and it turns out they're wrong. You know, we talked about this off the air. So,
well, that's what you get for liking Dynasty Warriors.
Oh! Right person, wrong IP, but yes.
Oh.
and Jason, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. It's a shame that apparently you'll never be allowed back on after this. But, no, but I mean, it's funny though that when fans see their IP die, that it's like it's the end of the industry. But when it's something they don't like, it's like, yeah, serves them right. Because I saw a lot of that hate going against EA with serves you right, Dead Space 3, with your stupid microtransactions and your funny clothes and your hair. You know, it's like, wow, that's, you know, a lot of pent up anger.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with anything that instills passion in people.
Right, and it's like, you know, it's kind of like what we talked about the PS4 thing. I don't agree with Cliffy B's comments that we certainly talked about this last time about the backwards compatibility. You know, but just because that thing is gone doesn't mean you have to stop playing it. It doesn't mean you have to throw it away. You enjoyed it. Good. Keep playing it. Have fun.
Yeah, people like to place themselves, and I do this as well, as savior of XYZ. You see a problem in the world, you're like, oh, if only I was in charge, people would listen to me and I'd solve it. And truth is, and this is for even all the kids out there as well, everyone, you're wrong. You are wrong. Those delusions are just that. The chances are, if you could do something about it, you would. I've got some great ideas, but I'm far too lazy to realize them. And they'll never come into fruition. And that's just life. So you can moan all you want, but unless you're actually doing something to change it, it's not going to change.
And again, it's the whole thing, you know, voting with your wallet kind of thing. You know, if something is no longer interesting, the market will find something else to do. Now, I hate to be picking on Cliffy B. I really don't hate to be picking on Cliffy B.
No, go ahead.
But he came out with another comment. He was making fun of smaller sites for disagreeing with him about microtransactions last week. Fine. Again, as I said, I just picture him and Randy Pitchford at PAX getting ready to fight everybody. But then he just wrote tonight something along the lines of, all you industry experts out there, why don't you try making a game once? I hate that. I hate that so much. Anytime anybody says, you don't get to criticize until you make a game. I know when the Philadelphia Eagles suck, even though I've never actually played a down of football in, you know, professionally. I know when you watch footy, you know when a guy made a bad pass, even if you've never played in the professional levels, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, you can criticize people.
Yeah,
doing anything. You watch the Olympics.
Right.
You'll shout at people just.
Yeah.
Like that was terrible. He only jumped like 6 feet or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's absurd. But yeah, it's what people do. And you don't have to with games, and pretty much any criticism. I'd argue, often people who work on the other side of it aren't the best to offer criticism.
No.
In one way, they obviously have a better appreciation of the effort that has gone into it, but that's not necessarily a good thing.
Right. Well, that's what in my interview I just did with Matt last week for Witcher 3, I asked him, I said, you know, can you ever play a game not as a designer? And he said, unfortunately, no. He said he is always stuck he sees exploits, he sees coding, seeing the Matrix type of coding, but he sees all of that. He doesn't just get pulled away in the experience, but he appreciates the work that's being done, but it's not the same experience that's being sold to us. So yeah, if you're too close to the environment, I think if you're a game designer, I think there's a good chance that you're more likely to go easier on something because you appreciate more the hard work that's gone into it.
Yeah. Although this does somewhat circle back to earlier we mentioned with the whole polygon score changing debacle.
Right.
We mentioned how they were saying, you know, people who are not trained in journalism. Mm-hmm. That is what makes up the majority of games writing.
Well, right, exactly. It's
passionate people. People who are passionate about a subject and have, you know, luckily managed to make it their career.
Or at the very least put up a website and start writing about it, because the vast majority of us do not make a cent doing this.
No, it is. It's a pure passion project for an awful lot of people.
I would say for an overwhelming majority, despite what some of them will have you believe.
Yeah, but I would argue that perhaps we're not the best to evaluate games.
That's true, too.
The passionate legions of people, it's difficult to know who would give the best opinion on something. And it's just a pointless...
Clearly, Ian, just press start.
We're the exception.
Of course.
That goes without saying. Every podcast is underlined by just press start for all your gaming reviews of the games we decide to play. Probably indie because we like that sort of thing. Good luck. That's every single podcast has that as a bit.
There is some legitimacy to that, too, that we very rarely play. You know, we don't give too many bad reviews because we very rarely play games we have no interest in or that sound to us as if we wouldn't enjoy them. But
this is it. If I look through my reviews, an overwhelming majority, and I've thought about this consciously, I'm like, am I not being critical enough? Because an overwhelming majority will be very, very positive. But it's because we look at the games we think will be good. And we're passionate about,
right.
And that's the ones we want to cover, because it is a passion project.
Now, that being said, Jason?
Yes?
Since you're new here, the next Barbie horse adventure, that's all you, man.
Okay, 10.
Oh, wow.
He's introduced a scoring system and put it straight in at 10. That's the sort of innovation that we need.
So that's clearly... 10 being the worst, and wow, he's just turning this industry on its ear. In one comment. Unbelievable.
You gotta innovate.
And that's why you gotta listen to Just Press Start, because we are paradigm shifters here. I'm not sure what a paradigm is or how you shift it. Is that like a manual transmission? When you shift it?
Is that on the 3DS?
Is that a straight six? I don't know how that... What? So what else do we have to discuss this evening? Does anybody have anything interesting that they've been playing or anything interesting that they've been reading about that we should get out there, or have we exhausted ourselves?
The funny thing is I've been playing the older Tomb Raiders just to get back in that universe.
Catching up.
My goodness. Well, not catching up, just seeing what the past looks like versus what's coming up. My goodness, they were obsessed with her breasts.
Huh. Yeah.
As were the boys that played the game, yeah.
You know...
Especially in Tomb Raider Legend. My goodness.
Yeah, it got a tad ridiculous, didn't it? Yeah. Well, I guess that that kind of ties us into one other thing we wanted to touch on. That's a bad
one. Oh, wow.
All right. Wanted to... Ian, anyway, we're talking about the Sony... the Sony's quote-unquote controversy. So we could discuss it really quickly.
Yeah, well, we left it as a sort of unintentional teaser last... Just because I mentioned it because I thought we were going to talk about it, but then we'd run out of time.
Right.
So anyone expecting in-depth analysis and sort of, you know, long opinions, well thought out, I'd go elsewhere. My opinion of it is essentially the same opinion I have with many of these controversies. I just can't see the malice in it.
You're never offended by anything, but we should tell people what you're not being offended by, because I don't know if we actually got into that.
Good point. What I'm not offended by this time, this could be a little segment in itself at the moment, the PlayStation 4 conference, there were no women who spoke at the PlayStation 4 conference. That's some people have interpreted. I didn't even notice. I don't know if that makes me ultra-sexist or completely not sexist or blind or what. I don't know what it says about me, but I didn't even notice that there were no women. It didn't even, I wasn't tallying it up in my head. I didn't think, I didn't, you know, look at it afterwards and think, oh, actually, I don't think I saw a woman speak. But to some people, that was quite sexist, how there weren't any women.
Did they think Sony was, like, tackling them as they were trying to race to the door to get up to the stage? Or what?
Well, this is where it falls apart for me. I can appreciate that there not being any women, even with the small demographic of women working in the industry, might be a little... I bet if you worked out the percentages, it actually would be fairly representative. You know, obviously 100% is not representative, but if you take it, I don't think having however many speakers they had and all of them being male would be that out of touch with statistics of people working in the positions that were being represented at the conference.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you think, oh, actually, there should have been one or two women, I just can't, in my mind, come up with Sony getting around, gathering around, and going, right, first order of business, we won't show the console.
No chicks.
And then second, no chicks, obviously. I mean, underlined, well, free time. Yeah. I can't imagine that. I just don't think it would have been a consideration. So I don't think it was intentional sexism. And therefore, I don't really think it's sexism. In a way, I don't want to say unintentional sexism isn't sexism, but at its core, it really isn't, in my opinion.
Jason, what about you? What do you think?
I kind of agree with Fenders on this one. They weren't doing it on purpose, but it would have been nice if they would actually acknowledge that females actually work on this project as well. And
right. But I guess, you know, when we had Jane Jensen Holmes on the program, that was about a year ago, I think, right, Ian? Give or take?
Am I the archivist now? Now that Zess isn't here?
Well, I was asking for – that was more for just confirmation. That was this, but correct me if I'm wrong. It was more like that, but I was trying not to be really smug about it.
No clue whatsoever, but I'll say passion. Yeah.
Sure.
I'll say yes, and I'll say it as if I know. Yes.
And then say concept, and then we'll know you're still here.
Yes. Conceptually, yes.
Nice. Okay. I remember asking her, you know, why does it seem like there are so few rock star, you know, back in her day, it's a horrible way to put that. But, you know, there was, you know, Roberta Williams, her, and Christy Marks, you know, and she's like, there weren't that many rock star women developers then, and there just aren't now. It's not that they don't have the opportunities, it's just there aren't very, very many rock star developers at all. So... And since there is a smaller proportion of female developers working in the industry, if they're not working on Sony projects currently, I don't know if they are or not as developer. You're not going to bring in, hey, this is somebody who coded the bullet mechanism on Lara Croft's machine gun. You're going to bring in lead designers. You're going to bring in lead story editors. And if those positions aren't being held by women, that is certainly a problem, you know, an issue the industry should deal with, but I don't know that it's any more or less sexist than any of the other issues we've talked about. And again, as three males, we really can't say, well, we don't find it, you know, we do or don't think that it's an issue. But I was talking to Jen about it, just to bring it up, Cry Valkyrie on Twitter, and asked her about it, and she said she didn't notice it, and she said there aren't that many of us in the industry anyway, so whatever. So I said, because I was all set to have her. I was like, you got to come on here. You can talk about this. And she's like, I didn't think it was a problem. I'm like, oh, okay, next topic. So it was really kind of anticlimactic. I really thought there was going to be not necessarily a rant, but, you know, something. And she's like, no, that's not really.
Yeah, I honestly think, and this probably won't be an overly popular statement, but
uh-oh.
I think – it's not. It should be. I intend it as being.
All right. Direct all comments to Finners at. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. What?
I think in the quest for equality, which is a quest I'm all behind, it should be equal. I think some people overreach slightly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they look for sexism and over. You know, it relates to any issue. Any ism basically has this, in my opinion, problem. People overreach and try to find it where it isn't in
right.
order to keep it as a focus in order to affect change, which makes, conceptually, it makes sense. But it does lead to us covering stuff like this and basically coming up with, I really don't see it as a problem.
Right.
Because, you know, I think it's It's not. I don't think this, the fact, none. I mean, if there'd been one female spokesperson, I can't help but feel someone would have interpreted that.
There's only, you brought out a token woman.
Yeah, a token woman to speak.
Which is a horrible, horrible, horrible term.
Well, yeah, exactly. There'd be people on the other side saying, you just brought her out. You should have brought someone more qualified. She's only a XXX, you know, whatever. Even if it was the highest position, there'd be someone taking it as that.
So do you feel Microsoft will overcompensate during their press conference?
People are suggesting that. I've seen that suggestion on the forums that, oh, well, they're going to... But again...
Although they do have a lot of high-ranked executives.
True.
I think they've got other things that they'll be focusing on.
Yeah.
Like I said, I couldn't imagine Sony getting around saying, right, no women. I can't imagine Microsoft. They might take a cue and might think, you know, let's consider that.
Yeah, well, Microsoft has a history of of having a lot of women during their
press conferences. That's one thing. As long as I think they might, and maybe just because they've always had this rivalry, they might kind of they might add a few people, a few presenters, just as a take that, Sony. You know, do it in such a way that it seems all perfectly natural, but, you know, for the people out there who want to keep score, who knows? I mean,
that's no less sexist.
Well, of course!
Like, if you interpret their actions as being, you know, to try and get one up, that's, if anything, worse.
We're going
to
collect more of them. I know. That's...
I just don't think, you can't really win either way. So... I didn't interpret sexism with the PlayStation 4 conference. I think the vast majority of people didn't.
No.
But it was something related to PS4 that, you know, we thought we should cover.
I said the thing I was kind of, I guess, not surprised about, because, you know, fanism comes out one way or the other, was I saw a fairly good bit of negativity about the conference. And again, I didn't watch it, but it just seemed like... even if you're a fanboy, there's no reason why if the other company can make what looks to be a kind of solid product, isn't that good for everybody? Because that'll push your group to do even better. I mean, it just seems like everybody wins when the technology is better and the prices are lower, or, you know, stay the same. I'm more concerned about the idea of $70 games, because there was a suggestion that games next generation might hit 70. I've been saying that for a while, that I think they'll try and pull the trigger on that.
Well, it won't be the first time that they were priced that high. Nintendo games are that high.
Super Nintendo Final Fantasy 3 or Final Fantasy 3 or 4, wasn't that like a $70 or $80 cartridge back in 1993? It was something ridiculous like that. So, and if you go by what people made in salaries back in the 90s, versus what they make now and what games... I just have a feeling they're going to try and pull the trigger on $70 games. I think they'll go $65 for a while and see how it goes, and then they'll see if it'll creep up. It'll creep up eventually.
I just don't imagine myself paying $65 for a game, even digital. A digital game for $65.
That's why we have Steam sales.
I know.
Or just PC gaming in general. Well, I can't imagine them getting the markup on PC that high. And perhaps piracy is an element of that. Yeah. If so, it's one of the only positive things it's possibly contributed. But yeah.
Is SimCity Digital $60?
I'm not sure, actually. Is that only on Origin?
Yeah, I believe so.
I'm afraid to boot up Origin right now because I don't want it to crash my system. So.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Since we're right in the middle of recording, that'd probably be a bad idea. But... I see them trying to pull the trigger on it, but again, there's a reason I'm not buying Tomb Raider today as much as I really, really want it, because I know in the summer it'll be at least 10 or 15% off for the Steam sale, since it's March now, and by Christmas it'll be a 40, 50%. So it's tougher because it makes it harder for me to review AAA titles, but at the same time, with a limited income, because, you know, we're not one percenters, you have to kind of make the best decisions, and $60 for most games seems too high at this point. It's very rare that I'll pay full price anymore.
Likewise, but I can see where the $60 comes from. If you think of production costs,
absolutely.
And, like, Dead Space 3 made a lot of money, but that's probably the end of the series just because it didn't make enough money because the production costs are so astronomical. And so I can see the justification behind it, but yeah, I don't pay full price now.
But that's like that. That's like that Skullgirls Kickstarter where they said they needed $150,000 or $100,000 or $150,000 to put one character in, and everyone said, "My God, that's astronomical!" But then that the company broke down where they were spending the money.
Oh, they did. And that's nice.
Yeah, they broke it down. It was another thing I found on Giant Bomb. I don't know where they did the breakdown, but Giant Bomb ran the story about it. And you know, some of the stuff seemed odd. There was a lot of outsourcing. It was like $20,000 in QA testing and $20,000. And some of that seemed a little odd, but overall, it's expensive. And it was one character. So just the astronomical cost, which leads me to talk about Kickstarter, which leads me to talk about, really quickly before we go, the Banner Saga. Has anyone been following that bit of controversy?
Is that the Banner? And it has been a saga, or is it called the Banner Saga?
It's called the Banner Saga.
Okay.
And it's a lot of former...
Does he turn into the Hulk?
Only if you make it angry.
Ah, okay.
And then the pants get all ripped and the shirt comes... It's inappropriate. No, this is a Viking RPG made by former BioWare employees. And they had a very successful Kickstarter... last year. They made some ridiculous amount of money, and the game has not come out yet, even though I think it's missed a couple of deadlines or whatever. They're still working on it, but Steam just released the Banner Saga Factions, which is their free-to-play multiplayer portion, which was never really even hinted at in the Kickstarter. So people are worked up about, well, wait a minute, why are you working on this when the game itself isn't out? And, you know, where's our swag? We already funded this. What is this blatant cash grab going on? So, thoughts?
It's your fault for spending that amount of money to kickstart it then.
Right?
There's people complaining. The only Kickstarter I've backed is the Double Fine one.
Okay.
That's the only one I've backed. I rarely look at them because the model, we've been through it before, but
of course, I don't trust
them. I don't trust pre-orders, so I'm not going to trust... they hadn't even been developed yet. But
the comment
I was just going to say, there's been people complaining about, you know, the documentary series that goes along with it that was promised. There hasn't been as many of those videos as people imagined. I don't even think they specified or have particularly gone behind what they said, but just people imagined it would be much more a weekly update or something as opposed to every couple of months. And people are complaining about that, but you've just got to take it. Like I said, it's your fault in a way. You've backed it.
Right.
You can't complain about their other decisions that they make. You're not invested in the company. You're not a shareholder.
Right. And the joke we had around work was they're ex-BioWare employees. They learned from EA. Of course they're shoehorning multiplayer into a single-player game. They've gotten good at that with Mass Effect. Oh, wait. We're a bit cynical there.
People just complain too much. I know I've spent a lot of my time complaining, and I do complain. I complain an awful lot, but I complain from an area of apathy. I'm actually quite apathetic about the world. And
It's not complaining so much as just pointing things out.
Yeah, it's moaning because I enjoy moaning. But it's not. There's no emotion behind it, really. It's not a complaint. I don't feel slighted by these things or upset. I'm not emotionally invested. It's just fun to moan. And that is... constructive, whereas getting emotionally invested and really, really feeling bad if a company does something that you didn't think they'd do, or just let it go.
Right.
Don't care as much. Join me in the apathy. That's my message.
Oh. Can I get an invite to that party?
You certainly can, but the fact you wanted one means you're not quite ready.
Yeah,
dang it. Oh.
If you want, well, no, Jason. If he wants to send one, fine. If not, don't worry about it, right?
I don't want one anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't want to make them up. Yeah.
Or maybe you do. You know, either way, meh. So. Well, with that, I guess, you know, we might as well wrap things up, or not. You know, so on behalf of Jason, Ian, and myself, thank you guys so much for listening. Quick news item to get it to mention, the second Neverwinter beta is this weekend. So if you have not had a chance to check out Neverwinter, the new MMO, definitely check it out, because what I played so far is really good. And they still have Founders Packs available, so, you know, again, check the site for our information on that. People know where they can get a hold of us. There's Twitter, there's the emails, there's, you know, all kinds of ways. There's the Facebook page. You know how to get a hold of us. You know you should be downloading the podcast, reading all the reviews, sending everything to all your friends. So keep doing that. Keep circulating the tapes. What? And we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
See ya. Thank you.